When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
And welcome back to yet another episode of Fantasy Movie Night. This time, the fantasy movie is being brought to us by our very own Scott Roger. I started the trend with Jason and the Argonauts.
I didn't pick this movie.
You didn't pick this movie?
Was no.
This Kyle?
So
I thought Matt picked it.
No. So we had.
This is like
had
that Spider-Man meme.
Listen. We've danced around the subject. Well, you guys have danced around the subject longer than I've even been on the show, right? Mm-hmm. So I just came in and I'm on a new political party stance that maybe I'll just piggyback off of the things. I'll take the fall if this goes poorly. And I don't think that it really went that poorly. I think that there's quite a bit more in here horror-wise than I
expected.
This
was way better than Jason and the Argonauts.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But Scott, you understand why I thought this was a you pick. This feels like a you pick.
Yeah, it should have.
I think you even said this. We've certainly talked about this movie specifically because I think that it had come out
again. No, I've never seen this movie before.
Yeah. You know what?
Was this all a first-time watch for us?
Yeah. No, I got the Blu-ray from Scream Factory about a year ago. They sent a review copy to me.
Yeah.
That was the first time I watched it, was when that review copy came in. You know what, though, Scott? I'm thinking realistically, if you were to pick a fantasy film, this would not have been the first one you picked. I can think of at least two other ones that would have had higher precedence for you.
Yeah, I always talk about Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, and another one of a similar title. But we'll get into that.
The thing about this movie, though, is that it's got a terrible title.
It's a really bad title because it's also not that accurate to like
exactly.
I mean, I guess it is. It is a sword versus a sorcerer.
And there is a sorcerer.
But it doesn't
give you the scope of how fucking this is a horror movie. Like this is a medieval horror movie.
I think it is, and I think it isn't, right? Like I think it's bookended by a horror movie. And then the middle of the movie, the middle of the movie's like a mid-season Game of Thrones episode. Like it's just like
you know,
like lots of political drama and fighting about who's like supposed to run the kingdom, and like when it gets into the nitty gritty, like, and this is rich coming from me, but when it gets into like the D&D bullshit, I'm just kind of like, what are we doing here?
It's because you live it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need to watch it. I lived it.
Separated from the podcast, please.
But holy shit, that sorcerer. Like, let's just talk about the bookends right now, because that's the main horror chunk of this.
That's why anybody should honestly see this. I mean, I think that you
20 minutes and it's the best fucking version of it.
No, because then you're missing a few great characters. There are some fantastic characters that we meet along the way.
Talon or whatever his name is.
Talon sucks.
Talon is a fucking douche, and I cannot believe that the princess fucks him at the end. Like,
yeah, but
bad
like,
choice. Wrong choice.
One of my early favorite characters was just the drunk in the bar, like 22 minutes into the movie. And then I also love Captain Morgan, who's just a very
You heard it
jacked...
first, everybody. Matt loves Captain Morgan.
Yeah, there he is.
But yeah, he like
he's
shows
the drunkard
up
at the bar.
Yeah, he shows up when they're all like making out with different gals, and he's like shirtless, and he's just like very, very prim and proper compared to the rest of the scallywags that are making up this army of heroes with quotes around them and
very much.
But I mean, this movie kicks off like when this movie started, I thought, oh yeah, oh yeah, like we get
the
this sorcerer
with the tortured, screaming, skinless faces,
dude, and like the guy raising from the tomb, and he's, I mean, again, number one reason why I thought that this was a Scott Roger pick is that you've got these amazing long fingers covered with so much goop.
Oh
that
my God.
Just
it was gooey.
Just through like telekinesis rips of, I think it's her heart straight out of her chest
I'm
into
guessing
his
it
hand.
Was her heart. I was like, did he take her spleen? You know, I was like,
that's what I was gonna say. It doesn't look anything like a heart, but that's the only thing that makes sense for him to have been. Or is she still alive and she just had, he gave her appendicitis. She had appendicitis.
Right.
He ripped that shit right out of
there. The wonders of modern medicine.
but then he,
3000 BC.
And then he kind of, like, not fully, but like, he kind of disappears throughout a large chunk of the movie. Like, he's there, but like, we don't think about him. Then we get this ending scene where he's just like ripping flesh off of his body to reveal himself again. And I'm like, ooh, we're a horror movie again, baby.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm going to give Jason the Argonauts over this movie.
Okay.
This movie needed some fucking creatures, man. I needed some like giant, gnarly creatures that they had to fight throughout this. Like, it's a pretty straightforward, this guy needs to kill the guy who killed his dad, like, revenge story. And then we get this awesome fucking gnarly sorcerer just kind of bookending it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they ran out of money. You know what the funniest thing is that I did some research for this movie because I didn't, it was a complete blind spot in my, you know, in my history as a, you know, a sword and sorcery kind of kid, definitely because it was way too obscure due to its gore. So, I mean, I'm glad that I've seen it once. Like, I wouldn't watch the whole thing again. But the thing about Sword and Sorcerer is that there were action figures. Well, there are figures. There were like, you know, like, and there are monsters in those figure collections. They're not action figures. They don't articulate, right? They're like, they're closer to battle beasts or, you know, like they're small. They kind of look like army
little
men.
Like statuettes? Like...
They're statuettes, yes. But they were made out of blown plastic or whatever and then painted. And there are people that collect them. There were whole websites of these dudes with all the collections and all of the weird information. And I say dudes because, let's face it.
Let's be real.
It's just lonely men who have collected these things. But there are monsters in those collections. And so Matt brought up Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
What this is actually missing is instead of in the middle 45 minutes where we're getting all the political back and forth, what we should have had is two monster episodes from The Witcher. And that would have made it a perfect horror, like medieval horror movie.
Not to mention that also in the middle of this movie, it's completely tonally off. Like, now the music is now this sort of Town That Dreaded Sundown-esque, like,
really, the music
level of
to
totally
me,
off.
That's so funny you mentioned the music, because I was like, the music feels like a 1940s sword and sandal movie. It's like Spartacus music, you know?
Oh, sure. I didn't read it that way, but I've also not really, I've not explored those sort of like older epic like things, so that didn't read to me at all. To me, it felt off. It felt really off. And I was like, this whole, especially the way we start, like how horror we started, I was then like, is this just, is this just how it's going to be? It was just kind of how I was asking myself. I was like, is this what I'm in for now?
Yeah. We've talked about this director before. This is the debut film from, how do you pronounce his
name? I say Albert Yun, but I don't know if that's correct.
We'll go with it. Yeah. But we've talked about a couple of his movies. We've done Vicious Lips. Cyborg was a Patreon pick at one point. Da Man's one that I always dance around possibly doing one of these days. We did Arcade. Like, he's done a lot of cheap, low-budget nonsense.
They feel similar, which is so funny to me. Oh, my God. Kyle, genius. You genius boy. I love you.
I couldn't make a noise, but I was just Warlock. I busted out those Southern Tier Warlock.
And what I have is I have mead.
Yes.
From Brothers Drake Meadery, and it's called Battle Axe. Which, and it's red. It's mead with cranberry, juniper berry, and vanilla. It's actually really
good.
Even
if you just went with a mead, it would make sense. But the fact that it's also Battle Axe is gnarly. Yeah! Spit out the cork.
That's just for Patreon.
That's for Patreon.
Similarly, to compare it again to something like Game of Thrones, there were multiple times where I went to consult the Wikipedia, and I think I just got more confused.
Yeah.
Like, it's just because it's
somebody
like
really, really intense. Like, I have to tell you the intrigue. I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah. No, but there was one thing I dove into very deeply, because this movie ends with the subtitle, Talon will return in the tales of an ancient empire. And I said, I don't think he did. So I did some Googling, and this movie came out in 2010, starring Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah.
Like,
the sequel?
Yes.
The sequel took 30 years almost, and none of the original cast. And also,
Sorbo was the right choice.
Kevin Sorbo was the right choice.
Kevin Sorbo.
But he's not playing Talon.
Oh.
I looked at the cast on IMDb. Talon is the last name on the entire cast list, which I think means that he just, like, pops up in the middle of the movie. He's just like, hey, guys, I'm Talon.
In flashback.
I'm also 55, yeah.
Yeah, like, I was like, Jesus Christ. At that point, you don't have to make this movie. Like, I'm sure that
no one's twisting your arm to make further adventures of
financiers are not waiting for
franchise.
You.
Is what that, and they had big plans. Like, they were gonna make this like a Jason and the Argonauts kind of thing, where it was serialized, where they were trying to do a movie every 2 years or something like that. Like, they had this whole grand plan, and it flopped so bad that they weren't able to do it. I remember one of the reviews that I read on the wiki was Roger Ebert. He gave it like 1.5 stars or something. Maybe it was a half star. He gave it a really bad review, and he was like, this is the most boring shit, more or less, you know, like in Roger Ebert voice.
I can see how it would be if you were to go to a theater and watch this when it came out.
Also,
I don't think there's like a lot
new?
Of like, yeah, but there's a charm to it as it ages, for us. And like, I watched it on Tubi, I think.
Yeah.
And
I watched the Blu-ray.
I don't think it was the best transfer. I don't think it was the Blu-ray or the 4K transfer on Tubi.
But I thought it looked good. I mean, I thought
it looked
DVD
great.
Transfer.
And but I can only imagine what the beards and the wigs looked like on 4K.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So here's the thing. And this is where I think George Lucas was really smart when he made Star Wars, is like, I do believe that he intended that to be a larger franchise, but he was really good at being like, this is a concise story. We're not even going to mention the concept that there could be a sequel to this movie until we see how it does. There is such a long history of people convinced that they've got the fucking franchise to end all franchises. Like, we've talked about Buckaroo Banzai. It ends with, like, Buckaroo Banzai will return in, and that shit never happened. I remember seeing Aragorn in theaters, because that was, like, at a time where I just went and saw some new movie every Friday, and that ends, like, on a to-be-continued. And I remember looking at the empty theater that I was in. I was like, the fuck it is? Like,
oh, my God. Based on the book?
On the book, yeah.
Oh, my God. I forgot that existed.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do want to read a couple quick reviews on the sequel that came out that we talked about. Because we're certainly not going to ever do this. Great, great critics got around to reviewing this one. So Salon.com said that Kevin Sorbo has sunk to sad new lows starring in the movie. And then...
This is 2010? Well, just wait
this is 2010.
A couple years.
Yeah.
It'll be even worse.
I know this name. I think I used to follow him on... he may have been someone I followed on Twitter at one point. Scott Weinberg... it said he was of Twitch film.
Yeah.
Called it one of the worst movies I've ever seen, and it's the sort of film that will make you reconsider if Yul Ball's status should be the king of crap.
Wow.
Like,
bold.
People were really upset.
Did Pune direct the sequel?
Boy, did he.
Oh, yeah. Leave him the fuck alone. He's not any Yul Ball, all right?
So future or the drivein.com, whatever, said that it tries really hard to follow up the happy-go-lucky spirit of the predecessor, but it manages to succeed on some level, but lacks the innocence and fun of Sorcerer. And then the DVD verdict wrote that the only redeeming quality of the film is that it's laughably short, which made me want to check here.
Yeah,
85
definitely.
Minutes. 85 minutes on the sequel to this.
I've laughed at shorter films.
Yeah.
When he gets... a scene right, it's gorgeous. Like,
yeah.
The scene at the end when the princess knees the king, who is actually the sorcerer, in the nuts, but it's actually a cod piece, and then he rips his skin off and he fights Talon. They're in like a small space, like that, you know, that cavern, and there's mist, or you know, like there's fog, and there are these pillars with, you know, like moss and stuff on them, and it looks so good.
I was gonna say, I think that this isn't necessarily a good movie, but for a debut feature, this is really good. Like, yeah. This is like one of those films where you watch it, and we've all seen those movies where we've watched a film by a first-time filmmaker, and while the quality of the film is up for debate, you can tell, like, oh, this dude's got an eye. Like, he's got an eye for how to really, like, make an interesting shot. I feel like that way a lot of time when it's like a... And sometimes it's too much. But you see that a lot with, like, actors turned director, where it's like, oh, okay. Like, they've spent enough time on set that they have a rough idea on, like, what they want to achieve with the camera. But while we're talking about the ending of the movie, the thing that made me chuckle out loud is we have this insanely shot slow motion scene of Talon jumping sword near the end of the movie. It's like 2 minutes with the epic music playing underneath him as it's
also
so
then he like does
top,
a oh, he does a crowd he like crowd kills with his triple sword after he grabs it. Also, that sword is
that sword.
Full of surprises. First of all,
dude, when it shot a blade out of it like a gun,
it's two blades. but then the extra surprise is that it breaks, and then he's got a dagger in the hilt. Like,
that is
the Inspector Gadget of swords.
It really was. This sword has everything.
Yeah.
It was great. And I'm so glad it came back, because I really thought it was like a one and done scenario.
Dude,
you know, like,
how did you think that it was a one and done when it's in the title? It's top billing, the sword.
Hey, at the like the 45-50 minute mark when the sorcerer didn't come back and the sword's nowhere to be found, I just felt like at a loss. Yeah. I didn't feel like we really tapped back into either of those things.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and the practical effects. and also the male gaze.
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Watching this movie, my brain was swimming with a lot of other fantasy movies that I still would love us to do for the show. So, Kyle, ask you, what double feature would you present?
I really just wanted to watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Fair.
I did.
That would
I did.
Be a really
I,
fun double feature, I, actually.
I think it'd be fun. You know, like, I know it's not entirely like fantasy. Like, a lot of the comedy doesn't lean towards a ultra fantasy version of this, but I don't know. I just thought it'd be fun.
I'll take it. Yeah. All right, Scott, passing it to you because I have two written down, so maybe you'll help this become an easier choice.
Well, I don't think that either of you guys have ever even heard of the one that I settled on, because there are other ones that came to mind. But I wanted something that wasn't good but was kind of a descendant of this kind of bad sword and sorcery movie. And so I am going to continue the night with 2014's Seventh Son, starring Jeff Bridges, Julianne Moore, and Ben Barnes. Also, whoa, Alicia Vikander is in it. I've watched it twice. It is a great movie to fall asleep to. It's kind of like just a really bad Witcher. You know, like it's the thing I love about Witcher, the Witcher TV show, is the monsters. And this movie feels like it's just kind of encapsulating the goofy monster shit that I like about the Witcher TV show.
Right.
Matt, what about you? Did I help at all? Probably not.
No, probably not.
Made things worse.
So while I was watching this movie, I kept waiting for the guy from Ghostbusters 2 to show up, and that's when I realized I was thinking of Dragon Slayer.
Dragon Slayer is happening on this show. And
that's what I was saying.
Me.
That's what I don't when I was like, you know what, thinking it. About it, if Scott was going to pick a fantasy
actually,
movie,
you know
he would start with Beastmaster
right
or Dragon Slayer. Yeah, right. But if I'm being honest, the movie that I most wanted to put on after this was Kroll. I love Kroll so much. Kind of bummed that we burned that on a Patreon episode.
Yeah,
I think
have
we should bring
that
back.
Right. I mean,
I've never seen it, but
it says that you can't.
Yeah, no. There's no rules in the book that say a dog can't play basketball.
Have you guys done Air Bud for Patreon?
We've done none of the Air Bud movies. Not Seventh Inning Fetch. We haven't done.
Well, March Madness.
We haven't done Golden Receiver. Like, there's all these Air Bud sequels.
Are these real?
Those are real subtitles
dog
to the Air Bud movies. I worked at a video store when they were popular. I remember. All right. So, guys, we're having a lot of fun here. We mentioned the Patreon. You should go to it. patreon.com/HMNpodcast for bonus episodes, extra movie conversations. You get to see our pretty faces on video. It's a really good time. You should also go to our website, HMNpodcast.com, if you want to buy some type of merch or anything like that. And then, hey, get your tickets to Creature Feature Weekend. Come see us hang out. It's going to be a good time. But now, Kyle, I have to ask you, what have you been watching, listening to, reading, etc.?
Okay, so recently, Carly, my buddy Evan, and I had taken a trip to Syracuse. So we came back the other night, and so we stayed over. And we were going to he was on a Nancy Meyers kick. We were going to try to find sort of like a romantic comedy type thing that we've never watched before. They've never seen High Fidelity, and I was like, it's not quite like it's a little different than what he's talking about, but I think it's something that we'd all like. We put in the disc for High Fidelity. The trailer for Mission to Mars comes on, and we all stop what we're doing. And I bought Mission to Mars on Vudu, and we stopped and watched Brian De Palma's Mission to fucking Mars. And that movie is I remember seeing Mission to Mars in the theater. So I was 9, which then I was like, I remember there being a scene where, and I won't, just in case anybody wants to see it and hasn't seen it, where one of the main characters decides to open up his mask in space to kill himself. And I was like, why did I see this in a theater at 9 years old? And it's because it's rated PG. And it has like 3 of the gnarliest space kills that I've, you know, adjacently seen for a Disney released like sci-fi epic. It's kind of, it's a really, really wacky movie. De Palma wasn't the first director to be attached to that. I think it was Gore Verbinski, which makes a lot of sense. So De Palma came in with a fully formed script and actors cast and is trying to direct this sci-fi epic about going to Mars in 2020. It takes place in 2020. And it's really crazy. It's not a great movie. There's a lot of interesting choices, and some of the kills and some of the sort of more tense moments are really wild. You know, we sat on the couch full of Doritos for 2 hours just being like, what is happening? It's wild. But I had Kinder trauma from that movie, and it holds up. Like, it holds up. I actually had to look away briefly and be like, it haunted me.
I had to Google this to make sure I wasn't crazy. That's one of the movies that they did when they were doing movies based on Disney attraction rides. They brought in Brian De Palma.
That got really
lost amongst the Pirates of the Caribbean and Haunted Mansion movie that they made at that time.
And we're talking, that's early. That's like, this is like 2000. So it predates some of those other more epic. It certainly was trying to be epic. And I mean, it's a space movie with more than a tinge of alien life. So it's worth seeing if you're into that stuff. But I couldn't believe it was PG. I couldn't believe I was watching it in my living room as a 32-year-old man. I can't believe I bought a movie on Vudu. I had the chance to rent it, and I bought it. Peer pressured. So now I own it. It's great.
Well, there you can go. Scar your child now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't.
All right, Scott.
So I finished a really great book a while back, and haven't talked about it yet, but I have also been burning through some really terrible books. So I'm going to talk about the one that doesn't suck. I really enjoyed The September House. Now, I don't have it next to me because I apparently didn't think forward. The author's name is Carissa Orlando. This is her debut novel. She is a clinical psychologist by day, and she wrote this awesome haunted house book that is really about trauma and abuse. But it does it's just a great, it's got a little bit of mind bender in it. It's got really cool, gruesome ghosts. Is really, really well written too. It did not take me a long time to, I mean, a lot of these books I'm buying because Book Talk, like Horror Book Talk, is telling me to. And I actually am so pissed off with the last three that I read. Well, two of the three that I read, that I was like, I need to just put everything into Goodreads. And like, my to-be-read list is finally digitized into Goodreads. And I need to start reading reviews because I am getting... You know, a book is not cheap. Like, if you buy a book from Barnes & Noble, it's like $17 bucks. And like, yeah, that's not terrible. There are way worse hobbies to have. But I also don't want to feed the machine for these people that write absolute schlock. So, and I don't actually, the more I'm reading modern horror, the more I'm feeling like how I feel about modern metal, which is that my tastes are so specific because I spend a lot of time being like, well, I wouldn't write that, or I want it to go in this way. And I don't want to sound elitist or gatekeepy. That's why I'm not talking about the books that I don't like.
But I think you're expressing a lot of why I like landed on reading so many of these like YA romance books, because it's like, it is exactly what I want it to be.
Yeah.
And like, I'm reading right now, this is not my part of my segment, but I'm reading the girl with all the gifts. It turned into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine, but like, I'm like I don't, this is the exact same amount of pages as any of the dumb YA books that I read, but like, with the YA books that I read, because they're so light and fluffy,
can read them in a day or 2 days.
Yeah, I can read them in a day or two because I'm just like, like I'm just going along for the ride. I know what the end game is and everything's fine. And like, I hate to say it like this, but when you're reading those books where you kind of know where they're going, you can like sometimes skim through a paragraph and not lose step.
Oh, dude.
I feel like when you're reading these like horror sci-fi books sometimes, there's so much deep, important like sci-fi exposition that I have to like really set aside a time where like, no, I'm going to read every damn word on this page before I turn to the next one because I don't want to suddenly be confused on why this character is not in the room anymore and I miss like the little one line that said that they got killed or whatever.
Well, and also I do think that a lot of the horror that at least that I've been consuming, it takes mental energy because you're really trying to put yourself into these situations with these characters so that you feel something, you know? And like with a YA book, it's so light that you could just be like, you can just kind of float through it because you don't have to expend so much mental energy, and that's the joy of it. And so I'm just really frustrated because I've been burnt by like 4 out of the last 7 books that I've read, just because they just were not, they didn't do what I wanted. Or and also there's so much edge in this modern horror stuff that I'm so sick of unlikable characters. I don't like it in horror movies. I don't like it in horror books. And so finding that happy medium of like, I want monsters. I want likable characters. I want some good prose that isn't too stream of conscious. Like the writing styles are just, everybody's got their own thing that they like. And for me, it takes a lot for me to really love a book. And like, I'm so spoiled by Jason Pargan, I think, because every time I pick up one of his books, even like What the Hell Did I Just Read, the third one in the John Dies franchise series, whatever, I didn't love it, but I still had a blast reading it, and it's because I love his style,
because he knows how to have fun.
Yes, but he still also knows how to do really horrifying stuff.
Yeah, sure. But I definitely have found that a lot of horror literature, more than movies, it is hard to find an author who remembers that horror is also supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
As well as scary. Yeah. And yeah, like,
or they try and then it's just real fucking lame.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to use that as a springboard to talk about something that's great. That's
80s. Please do. Thank you.
Slasher throwback. Because for Valentine's Day, me and the girlfriend went and saw Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Boy, was it just, it was just a good fun time. Yeah. I don't think it, how do I word this? I think I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd ultimately. And I wrote a review, which is rare, but I said like, it finds a perfect harmony between early career Tim Burton, late career John Waters, and 1930s Universal. Like it meshes those all into like a nice little mixing bowl to me. Because color wise and framing wise, like there are absolute Tim Burton like shots, but the way that it is such a like sarcastic look at just like the nuclear family just like oozes serial mom
confirmed
energy.
You gave
the
it 4 stars.
Yeah,
but I also follow like 5 Matts. Why do I do that? You're the only Matt I should be following.
But yeah, it's got a lot of like early, like later John Waters where he's like taking a big old chop at suburbia. And it's fun. I mean, there are moments when I watched this movie where I was like, I was shocked at things that happened, but when the movie was over, we realized that in front of us was a mom with a group of kids who were like 8, 9, 10 years old.
Moron. Oh my god,
it's a PG-13 movie, so like I kind of get it, because she also had like 12 and 13, like she brought like her kids. But afterwards, Barbara and I were like, there are at least 2 scenes where I'm sure she was sitting in the theater kind of like, oh no.
Oops.
What have I done?
Is it the thing about the, like, doesn't Lisa get masturbated with a Hitachi or something like that?
I felt this way watching Mission to Mars. Just bear with me for a second. Because I had the realization that I was like, oh, no, my parents didn't vet the movie.
Of course not.
You know what I mean? They were like, a space movie. He's almost 10. It's Disney. It's in a theater. Like, let's go, right? Like, Lisa Frankenstein emits this sort of like, oh, when I was a kid, I might have seen Heathers or Edward Scissorhands or like all of these things, right? Like all these movies that it's emulating. So but then that kid's going to remember that they got to see that in a theater, and they're going to grow up to be just like us, and it's going to be a magical thing.
That's, you know,
we're all thankful for.
Fair point. But yeah, I mean, the very quick short review is it's fun. It looks like it's starting to gain some traction. I think the week that it came out, there was a lot of like, please go see this movie. It's really great and no one's seeing it. And I think it's starting to like build up.
I think it's remained visible, or like it's remained.
It's certainly doing better than Madam Web that came out around the same time. So like, it's definitely, I think it'll be in theaters longer than Madam Web, which, you know, for a Focus Features release versus a Sony release, that's big. And especially, look, we all love Diablo Cody around here. We want her to succeed and make more movies like this in Jennifer's Body. So, and also, it's a directorial debut from Robin Williams' daughter, Zelda. That's really cool.
That's cool.
It's got a lot of that energy. There are some really fun, cheeky references. I cannot wait for 2034 when we finally do it on the show. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, just stay tuned for whatever we got to talk about next week. Maybe it's seasonal. Who knows?
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.